Welcome to the Georgia Today podcast. Here, we bring you the latest reports from the GPB newsroom. On today's episode, the coming winter weather prompts Governor Brian Kemp to declare a state of emergency. A Georgia financial advisor has pleaded guilty in a Ponzi scheme, and officials have confirmed a baby has the first case of measles in Georgia in 2026.
We want everybody, parents and children, to check their vaccination status and make sure that they're up to date on their measles vaccine.
Today is Thursday, January 22nd. I'm Peter Biello, and this is Georgia Today. Experts are warning people to keep up with current forecasts as a winter storm approaches. 30 North Georgia counties, including Atlanta's Fulton County, are under the latest winter storm watch issued by the National Weather Service at noon today. But if the storm moves further south, more areas of the state could see dangerous impacts. GPB's Chase McGee has more.
Dr. Marshall Shepard is the director of the Atmospheric Sciences Program at the University of Georgia. He says counties in some places will see sleet or freezing rain.
What's driving our scenario is something called the wedge. Here in Georgia, we get a nose or wedge of cold air that dams up against the southern Appalachians and oozes down the I-85 corridor from the Carolinas into Georgia.
He warns that not only will we see precipitation, but you can also expect 20 to 30 mile an hour winds, and then temperatures in the single digits next week as people recover from the storm. Shepard also warns that because of early online buzz about this storm, some people might have old or bad information about where it's going. Even worse, some people might not know it's coming at all.
We have to be okay as a culture, as a society, with preparing for things. You know, I've seen scenarios where, you know, tornado watch was issued for folks and it didn't actually happen. And it was almost like they were mad the tornado didn't destroy their house because they actually prepared for it.
Emergency officials say people need to have essentials on hand, including water, shelf-stable food, batteries, and light sources, regardless of what the forecast says right now. For GPB News, I'm Chase McGee.
If you have not yet prepared for the storm, do it now. That's according to state officials. GPB's Sarah Callis has more.
Georgia Emergency Management Director Josh Lamb says it's time for residents to stock up on food, gas, and other essentials before the storm brings ice and snow to the northern part of the state.
By being ready for the storm, Georgians can do their part in minimizing risk, reducing the time it takes to recover, and most importantly, prevent the loss of life.
Lamb also says people should not use the oven to warm up their house or bring a generator inside because of carbon monoxide poisoning risk. Officials are also telling drivers to stay off the roads if they are icy and to drive slowly. If you must drive, they say to use extra caution. For GPB News, I'm Sarah Callis.
Governor Brian Kemp has declared a state of emergency. The order suspends truck weight limits to allow emergency response services to move fuel and supplies around the state and authorizes the call of 500 National Guard troops.
Now, obviously, we do not have a need for those folks right now. Hopefully, we won't. But we just want to be prepared in case we do that we can move and get General Wilson and his team responding as quick as possible.
Major General Dwayne Wilson leads the Georgia National Guard. The troops could help clear the roads and move equipment if needed. He says trucks will start brining roads late Friday, and local and state emergency management services will monitor the storm 24/7.
The Georgia Department of Public Health last week confirmed a case of measles in a baby who was too young to receive the routine measles vaccination. It's the first case of measles identified in Georgia this year, and last year in Georgia, there were 10. For more information on measles and how to best protect yourself, let's turn to Andy Shane. She's professor of pediatrics at Emory University School of Medicine and a physician at Children's Healthcare of Atlanta. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here, Peter.
So measles is extremely contagious. Can you spell out what it takes for the virus to spread from person to person?
Yeah, so measles is one of the most contagious viruses that we know of, and it spreads via the airborne route primarily. And so, unfortunately, if a person with measles is in a room and leaves the room, the measles virus can continue to be present in the room for up to 2 hours after the individual leaves the room. And also, if you have unvaccinated people who are in a room with somebody who has measles or comes back into the room after someone with measles has left, between 8 to 9 of those individuals who are unvaccinated will then acquire measles.
So when doctors learn about a potential exposure situation, how do they go about tracking people down and let them know they might have been exposed?
So this is a collaborative team effort when this occurs between public health and the clinician who is involved. These outbreak investigations are a huge effort, require a tremendous number of resources, and involve the public health agencies working together with the clinician, basically tracking everywhere that an individual who is infectious has been within a certain period of time.
Once someone's alerted that they may have been infected, what's next? Do they have to isolate themselves and monitor for symptoms? And if they have to isolate, about how long do they have to isolate for?
So it depends on the exposure and the extent of the exposure. We have two situations. One is quarantine, when an individual is asked to not go out into the environment after they've been exposed. That individual who's been exposed is not symptomatic, and so they have to be in their home for a period of time after the last infectious exposure. And that can vary, depending on the situation, between 3 to 4 weeks. If a person is exposed and becomes symptomatic, then they also go into what we call isolation, where they have to remain at home or in a home environment for a period of time as well.
How effective is the measles vaccine at preventing serious illness?
So the MMR vaccine, and that's the vaccine that is available in the United States, it contains protection against measles. One of the M stems for measles, one of the M stands for mumps, and the R stands for rubella. What we know is that in a population who receives one dose of the measles vaccine, it's between 93% to 95% effective, and that's after the receipt of one dose. In the United States, we recommend that everybody receive a second dose, and that additional dose, it provides additional protection in that 5% to 7% who may not have mounted protection to the original vaccine. And so with two doses, 97% or so, 98% of the population is immune to measles.
So what should you do if you think your child may have been exposed to someone who has a confirmed case of measles?
So first of all, we want everybody, parents and children, to check their vaccination status and make sure that they're up to date on their measles vaccine. So that's the one thing that everybody can do. If we're up to date for age on measles vaccination, then the chances that you will acquire measles after being exposed are extremely low. If your child is unvaccinated or unable to be vaccinated and you hear or are concerned that they may have been exposed to someone with measles, the first thing to do is to monitor for symptoms, and if symptoms should develop, then seek medical care. It's also important before going to a physician's office, if you think that you have measles, to call ahead and notify so that you can be seen in a way that you won't expose other people to the measles virus if you in fact do have measles.
Well, thank you so much for this information. Andy Shane is professor of pediatrics at Emory University School of Medicine and a physician at Children's Healthcare of Atlanta. Thank you so much for speaking with me.
My pleasure.
The state will not prosecute a former candidate for the Georgia Public Service Commission who was arrested and charged with stealing Georgia Power trade secrets. Fulton County District Attorney Fonnie Willis wrote in a court filing yesterday that the evidence doesn't support further prosecution of consumer advocate Patty Duran. The Democrat was arrested after an October PSC meeting when she took a Georgia Power notebook that was left unattended at a podium for hours. The Trump administration wants to release Georgia's mental health care system from federal supervision after 16 years. The State Department of Behavioral Health and Developmental Disabilities yesterday announced a joint court filing with the U.S. Department of Justice. If the court approves it, Department Commissioner Kevin Tanner says the agency no longer would have to abide by more than 60 provisions of a 2010 settlement.
The 60 behavioral health provisions will be replaced with a single requirement that we house 537 additional individuals in supportive housing. These will need to be provided through 404 Georgia housing vouchers.
The original settlement was meant to avoid a lawsuit over accusations that the state violated the Americans with Disabilities Act. Tanner said funding for those housing vouchers are included in the department's latest proposed budget. He credits the development to years of investment in Georgia's behavioral health system. Fulton County commissioners have approved funding for supportive housing after a public outcry from residents and leaders of the city of Atlanta. But GPB's Amanda Andrews reports the money approved will last only through this year.
Fulton County voted to approve $2.1 million for supportive housing projects addressing chronic homelessness. Atlanta housing organizations are expected to open 230 new units of supportive housing this year. Funding covers the cost of social services through 2026, but funds for 2027 and beyond are not a given. Sojourner Maribel Grimmett is a housing advocate. She says sustained help would be ideal.
People need stable housing, affordable housing. And so this would be a long-term solution for me, an effort that I believe that the Board of Commissioners need to look down the road, if you will.
Fulton County passed its 2026 budget in a 4-3 split vote. For GPB News, I'm Amanda Andrews.
A Georgia financial advisor has pleaded guilty in a Ponzi scheme that bilked more than 2,000 people out of $380 million. Federal prosecutors say 54-year-old Todd Burkhalter entered the plea yesterday to wire fraud. Burkhalter was accused of marketing fraudulent investment schemes and pocketing the money. His company was based in Alpharetta, north of Atlanta, and the FBI says many of his victims lived in the Atlanta area. Augusta has its first-ever James Beard Award-nominated chef. The awards, often called the Oscars of the food world, yesterday announced semifinalists for its 2026 honors. Along with 9 Atlanta-area restaurants or chefs, this year's nominees include Todd Schaefer of the 12-year-old Abel Brown Southern Kitchen and Oyster Bar in Augusta. And that is it for this edition of Georgia Today. If you want to learn more about any of these stories, visit gpb.org/news. And if you haven't yet hit subscribe on this podcast, make sure you do it now. Keep us current in your podcast feed and send us feedback if you've got any. The best way to reach us is by email. The address is georgiatoday@gpb.org. I'm Peter Biello. Thanks again for listening, and we will see you tomorrow.